The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Excuse me, that's my stool or chair. Technically, it's a stool, but you can understand why I prefer to call it a chair. Anyway, that one's mine. So, as a matter of fact, yes, it does have my name on it. If you want to look there, it's etched in the chrome. It can, buddy, I built this diner on rock and roll. Okay, so if you could please just move down to the end of the counter, thank you very much. Here's your lemonade. Man. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilac, sitting here finally having found a spot at the old boomerang pattern Formica counter out on old Highway 23. I've never seen the diner this packed, and I think I know the reasons why. It's 92 degrees out there at night, and the diner is air-conditioned. So where these people have come from, I don't know. I'm just happy that they found the place. In one sense, it makes me feel rather self-conscious to be sitting here talking to you when everybody else is either talking to somebody else or reading a newspaper or going about normal diner activities, but I'll just pretend it's us. Well, we begin in the usual diner fashion. I attempt to stump the diner computer. I've got the computer and the jukebox and the radio all tied in together, and whatever verbal commands I make, they can scurry off and find a tune to fit my criteria. So what'll it be tonight? Well, diner, computer, I'm in the mood for some disco. No, that's too obvious. That's too 90s. I want something a little more classic. That's closer. That's the genre and epoch I'm looking for. But I'm looking for something that didn't start a career like that tune. I'm looking for something that sort of, indicated the end of one. Or at least its imminent conclusion.
Chaka, 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 gone. Chaka, gone. Chaka, gone. Chaka, gone. Chaka, gone. Let me rock it, let me rock it, Chaka, gone.
No, that's not it. Chaka Khan is still alive. She could revive her career if she wanted to. Computer, find me a song from the acme, the zenith of the disco era. Make it a cover song. Make it a cover version of a Carly Simon tune. How about that? Okay, and disco-fy that mother down. And start playing it, and I'll think of a celebrity who was held in great esteem and beloved, who managed to make a very bad career move toward the end of his days. Start playing it. The name will come to me. That's good. That's good. It's bad. I like it. I know who I want to hear, because when you think disco, you think Fred Astaire.
There's a new kind of dancing. You just leave yourself behind like an actor on a stage. Yeah. Cop a different pose from the pose you're in. Find a different attitude from underneath your skin. If you stretch or shake, and it don't really matter what moves your body makes. It don't really matter what steps you choose to do.
All right, all right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's over. It's done. I will not besmirch the memory of our beloved Fred Astaire anymore. No one put a gun to his head. Anyway, all right. Well, now it's time for Suspense. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, no, I'm not kidding. If you remember a previous diner, we had some fun with a, and I use fun in the loosest possible sense of the word, with a radio show that ran for many, many years and had a variety of announcers who introduced Suspense in various ominous and stentorian tones. Well, in 1958, they got a new guy, and he, let me put it this way, he had the most flat, affectless, and yet indescribably malevolent announcing voice ever heard. I don't know what his name was, but he was the announcer for Suspense.
And now, $5 tip, starring Carl Swenson, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
That's actually pretty chipper for him. Check out how he introduces the second act of Just One Happy Family.
Now, starring Ray Noble with Miss Lee Patrick, Act Two of Just One Happy Little Family.
I think he was at his best when the title of the program had a certain elemental simplicity and bluntness to it, such as this one with Win Place or Die.
And now, Win Place or Die, starring Frank Lovejoy, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The problem, of course, was when this gentleman was asked to apply his estimable talents to a title that, well, shall we say, really didn't mesh with his particular vocal style.
Like Man, Somebody Dig Me, starring Ted Reed. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Yeah, yeah, suspense, keep you well calculated, etc. I mention this because I actually listened to this episode a few weeks ago when I was driving up Old Highway 10 to Fargo, and it kept my attention for 20 miles or so. Not a bad story. Like most suspense stories of the time, it wasn't a trick-ending O. Henry type, and it wasn't the sort of brutal, obvious crime drama they did later. It was just a basic story, and you could see the ending coming, well, depending on your visibility, miles away. What was interesting about it was the protagonist, the anti-hero. He's a beatnik. And you can tell from the show how much middle America hated these guys and really how irritating they were intended to be. You can picture the fellow, tall, sort of looked like Anthony Perkins without all the weird, nervous psycho mannerisms, laid back, maddeningly indifferent, khakis, T-shirts, tennis shoes, short hair, and just an attitude that made you want to reach back 47 years and slap the guy. Here's how this beatnik introduced himself to America on Hey Man, Won't Somebody Dig Me? A tale, well, you know the rest.
Man like crazy. Man, I dig everything. I dig Zen and underarm deodorant. I dig Elvis Presley and Sputniks. I even dig people that drive right on by when I'm hitchhiking. People call me the tennis shoe, because I wear them and because I'm always on the move. But mostly, because I'm cool, man.
Okay, well, this just doesn't hold up to scrutiny, does it? I mean, if you're always on the move, you're not going to have a constant nickname among the people that you subsequently meet. I mean, if you're called tennis shoe by the people who know you in the area where you stay, that's understandable. But if you show up someplace, nobody's going to look at you and say, you seem to be constantly on the move, ergo I'm going to give you a nickname based on the things you use to cover your feet. It just doesn't hold together. But note the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch that tells you you're in the presence of a beatnik, somebody who adheres to none of the social compact the rest of us hold dear. And the wild wailing sax only makes the point clear. It's, you know, this is Sharks and Jets territory here. Well, the fellow, Tennis Shoe, eventually lands at a cafe. He gets a ride from some square johns who are heading off to Vegas, and the proprietor of the cafe, or so we think, heads the square johns off in a wrong direction. Tennis Shoe comes around the corner and has a conversation with the man who runs the cafe. And here we meet another beatnik. Listen closely. Tell me if you've heard this voice before.
Takes me quite a while to scrub, and I come back around the station just in time to see the two squares drive off down the road. And what do you think happens? Instead of turning right to go to Vegas, they turn to the left. When I come in the cafe, I surprise this cat behind the counter.
Oh, man, you walk up on people like too quiet.
That's why they call me the tennis shoe.
Hey, like you're hip. They call me the cat.
I can tell why. Where did those two squares go?
Mexico.
Mexico? They said they were going to Vegas.
I know. They asked me where to turn, and I told them. If they drive long enough, they'll wind up in Mexico.
Oh, man. You are too cool.
That's right. It's Don Messick. Or it's Dawes Butler. I confuse the two. Whatever. It's one of those ubiquitous Hanna-Barbera cartoon voices on everything from Top Cat to the Jetsons. And here he is being a beatnik. You can hear it in the voice. Well, eventually, Tennis Shoe is arrested for murder. And here, once again, we see his annoying beatnik-like refusal to understand the gravity of the charges being brought against him.
Now, look, buddy, you'd better give us your name and give it to us fast.
I told you, man, I'm the Tennis Shoe.
I don't like your flip attitude.
So flip, man, flip.
I don't know whether you realize it or not, but you're in bad trouble. You've been caught with a murder weapon, no identification, and no alibi.
I told you my story, but you don't dig it.
You expect me to believe you've just been passing through the state?
Well, don't forget that Bronson cat in Gallup, New Mexico. He's all the alibi I need. I was swinging at a party at his place last night, all night. He digs me, so I'm not shook. Well, this is a new kick, Daddy-O. I ain't never been up for murder before. It is too cool.
Oh, just hang him already. And actually, that's what they try to do. A lynch mob forms outside the jail, convinced that he's killed some people. We, of course, know that the murderer was actually Cat, not Tennis Shoe. But they don't know this, so they drag him out to the park and throw a rope over a stout limb. And they're about to string him up when he's saved at the last moment by who? By the Square John couple who picked him up while he was hitchhiking. He gets cut down, and all is well. Alas. Does he learn anything from this escapade? No. He goes on his indifferent, maddening, insouciant ways, and at the end of the program, tricks a blind old lady into sitting in a funeral parlor, making her think that it's a pharmacy. Oh, 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 those wacky beats. Slap them. And take their bongos away while you're at it, too. Well, I have to attend to a matter right now. I'll be right back. And until I return, I leave you with this little musical interlude. The diner returns after this.
My bathroom is a private kind of place. Very special kind of place. The only place where I can stay. faces at my face. My bathroom is my very special room, where I crimp and fuss and groom, where I can get away from all and really feel in bloom. I'm free.
We're back. The Diner Tonight, incidentally, is brought to you by Wildroot Hair Cream, the cream you can apply in your bathroom where you cream. Wildroot, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
You know as well as I do, fellas, your hair is one of the first things any gal notices. So it's really important to keep your hair spruced up right all the time. The answer? Why, of course, Wildroot Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Wildroot Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. I have a hunch, fellas, she'll help herself to another look if you're using Wildroot. Get Wildroot Cream Oil Hair Tonic in bottles or the handy new tube. It's again and again the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Wildroot, for many years, was the sponsor of The Adventures of Sam Spade, a wonderful little detective story that ran on Sunday nights. Sam Spade, the famous character that you may remember Humphrey Bogart playing in the movie, was played here by Howard Duff, who did a wonderful job as a wisecracking, somewhat sort of surprisingly erudite, and well-spoken detective. Effie was his secretary. Every show began the same. Sam would call up on the phone and tell Effie, who was very worried about him since she hadn't seen him for 6 hours, and tell her that he was coming into the office, sweetheart, to dictate my notes on the adjective noun caper. That was the format for all the titles, adjective noun. Occasionally it was the adverbial gerund caper, but it was always blank, blank caper. They were all wonderful capers. Then he'd blow into the office, have a little banter with Effie, and dictate his notes, usually to the police chief, sometimes to his client. Sam never seemed to make any money in any of these episodes, and there seemed to be a dead body showing up in every single week, which would be unusual. It's the same thing you find with that Murder, She Wrote lady. After a while, you'd think the authorities would wonder why this person was in the vicinity of 52 murders a year. But Sam was respected by the cops, so they gave him a pass on this one. In any case, the show had its unusually postmodern moments in which it seemed very self-referential and winking about the fact that he was a fictional character and that he was on a radio show, as you'll hear here. This, I think, is a bit of a flub. I'm not sure this is intentional, and you may actually hear Sam Spade and Effie cracking up as they dissect her little spoonerism, shall we say. This is the beginning of the noun gerund caper. Effie has been reading too many hard-boiled detective novels. Sam's a little skeptical of their worth, but Effie tries to tell him, "No, Sam, they're really good, particularly that one author." Well, give a listen. 1948.
Oh, Sam.
Yeah, come on in. Let's get this over.
Anyway, will I finish this chapter?
Hmm?
A page to go. The detective had just found this girl in the sordid rooming house.
Mm-hmm.
He had this fight with her boyfriend and boinged him.
Boinged him?
And now butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. But I don't trust her.
What's the name of the book?
Morgue Fruit.
Morgue Fruit.
His last was A Spindly Stiff.
Mm-hmm.
That was about this neurotic nurse who was in love with her employer.
Effie, how long have you been reading this kind of trash?
Well, it's not trash, Sam. Well, he really makes his characters live.
Mm.
And I love his detective. He's real hard-boiled, like in Dashiell Hammett.
Dashiell Hammett? Mark your place and come in.
All right, sir.
You get a sense of the chemistry of the two actors. It was pretty good. After the caper is over and the dictation has begun, Sam always commands Effie to go type up the notes. And in one of the episodes, he says, "I want them typed up in 34 seconds, which happens to be the duration of the subsequent Wild Root commercial. At the end of this one, this is the same episode, Sam and Effie are talking about detective novels again, and, well, figure this one out. It's pretty surreal for 1948. Then again, maybe it isn't.
Come on in, Twinkletoes.
Well, here it is, Sam. And I like it even better than Morgue Fruit.
You did.
I mean, it's not so realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I like a romantic-type story myself.
You
Lots
do.
Of atmosphere and psychology and those.
Oh, you've got to have those.
You really should be a writer, Sam.
Right, you think so?
Of course, detective stories don't pay much.
No, that's true.
But if you write enough of them,
mm-hmm.
and look at all the material you've got.
No good. Never do for fiction.
But, Sam, there's already that radio series, The Adventures of You-Know-Who, Sunday Night.
That's what I mean. I don't make a penny out of it.
Well, it's your own fault. Sam, I don't want to seem critical, but if you played your cards right, you could have owned a piece of that show.
What? And follow Blondie? Go home, Effie.
I think I will, Sam, and just curl up with a good book.
All right.
I wonder who killed who.
Well, when you find out, don't let me know.
Oh, you know you can't wait.
No, I can.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
So, in other words, Sam and Effie are completely aware that there is a radio show on Sunday night about Sam and Effie, about the adventures of Sam Spade. They don't seem bothered by it in the least. Sam certainly doesn't seem likely to sue for the use of his voice or radio likeness. Sam doesn't seem likely to sue, for that matter, for the use of his cases, probably because he assumes the stuff on the radio is fictional, makeup. That's what they have on the radio, right? As opposed to his life, which is real to him. But, of course, to those of us at home, he's on the radio talking about a show on the radio inside the radio. It may be an early radio version of The Matrix, for all I know. But it's illustrative of one of the most delightful shows in the old days. The Adventures of Sam Spade, canceled in 1952, alas. Howard Duff had left the program by then, and in its last year, well, let's just say by 1952, the name Dashiell Hammett was not exactly in good odor with the American people thanks to his communist problems. So out the show went, and was really never equaled by anything else. Well, they tried. There were detective shows before and afterwards. There were The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, which really weren't that good, a little too blunt, a little too two-fisted, and lacked that touch that Chandler and Bogart brought to the Marlowe character. There was something called Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Adventures of a Fabulous Insurance Investigator. And the words fabulous and insurance investigator don't always come to mind, but they did back then. For many, many, many years, Johnny Dollar was a weekly show in which Johnny would gentle over the world, padding his expense account, trying to find this, that, or the other stolen item that somebody had claimed in their insurance. It ended in 1962. It was a very long run for a show, and for one is really as inauspicious with as many people who played the lead role. I think there were like 68 Johnny Dollars over the course of its history. It was odd that one of the last shows to air on radio, the golden age of drama, well, you had suspense, you had Johnny Dollar, and then it was news and rock and roll. There was also, wait a minute, There's a couple of guys who just came in here. Taking seats at the counter now. They look like cops. They look like plainclothes detectives. I'm going to point the diner directional microphone over their way and see what they're talking about. The counterman is heading over there right now with some cups of coffee and a menu. Let's listen.
That's going to be another long night.
Well, I hope we get something out of it.
Yeah. Howdy, fellas. What'll it be?
A couple of eggs over easy. I get it. A side order of bacon.
Well, thank you. Now, how about you?
That sounds good, Joe. I'll have the same. Only make my eggs straight up, will you? And I'll have a side order of ham.
Righto.
And two coffees. Will you bring them right away?
Sure thing. I'll get them for you right now.
Listen, I gotta get home.
I will have a cup of coffee. I'll drop you off.
Wife's gonna be sore if I don't make it pretty quick.
Well, let her be sore. That's the trouble with women today. All the time trying to run our lives.
It's right.
Have your coffee. We'll meet my friend. You'll like him.
I feel so good. Maybe I ought to leave now.
Look, you'll be all right. Just take it easy.
Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Tall guy. Fits the description.
Yeah.
Looks like he might be setting one up.
Let's check it.
Wife gives you any trouble, stay with us. Something you want?
I wonder if you'd let us take a look at your identification.
Why?
Because I ask you.
Who are you?
Police officer.
Watch out.
Come on.
All right, mister, you got one chance and one chance only. Tell us, you are Mary, Queen of Scots.
You're out on a limb, cop. You got nothing. I'll be free in a couple hours.
Wow, that was Jack Webb. That was the Jack Webb. He's taller than you'd think. Anyway, he also apparently travels with his own band, and they're getting out their instruments now, signifying that the scene is about to be concluded. Yes, I believe the scene is over. But that's the kind of music. Am I right, boys? That's the kind of music you use to tell me that the story isn't over, but the scene is concluded, and we're moving on to the next phase, right? Because it's sort of it's a stinger that lets us hang there. It provides closure, but not in the most general sense, just in a very specific sense. Am I right? Yeah, I'm getting a thumbs up from the band leader. All right. You know, it's still hot in here, beastly hot. You want to go down to the lake? The reason is this. I'm going to be gone for a while. The bleat, the website, lots of stuff happening. Trust me, lots of stuff happening. And for the next week or so, I'm not going to be able to do any bleat updates. While I retool the site and retool life and job and house and everything else. Don't worry, everything's fine. Everything's going to be great, even better than it is when I'm done, but just a lot of work ahead. So rather than sit in here, where, granted, we've got air conditioning, but it is a little close. And there's blood on the floor, too. And teeth, as a matter of fact. Let's just go outside, down to Lake Lalaque. Yeah, that's the name of it. The diner is next to Lake Lalaque, which, of course, is French for the lake. I think, you know, you got 10,000 lakes, you're going to run out of naming opportunities at some point. I think the French were just tired by the time they got around to this one and just said, Lake Lalaque, or Lac Lalaque, Lac Lalaque, Lac Lake Lalaque, whatever. It's picturesque when it's dark. You can't really see the seaweed or the various wrecks of the mining and ore ships that, unfortunately, I don't know why there are wrecks of mining and ore ships. It's a completely sealed lake. There's no estuaries. There's no rivers. But I don't know. You never know what people do. Maybe there's a Edmund Fitzgerald Recreation Historical Fan Club out there that likes to die during a storm or something and go down with a bunch of taconite pillings. Who knows? Anyway, let me pay up here. Oh, who am I kidding? I never pay. I got to run on tab on the joint. And let's head down to the lake. I can probably turn on the diner radio from there and give us something to listen to as we close out just maybe the last diner of the summer. Shall we go? Let's go.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me. Coming through. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? You see, you're having the deep-fried ham. Yeah, it's a diner specialty. Real summertime treat. And some watermelon, too. Yeah, see you later. Hey, you Joe. How you doing? Haven't seen you in a while.
Got a match? Just kidding. Have a good night. Ah, this is perfect. I swear, some nights I could just stand all night and watch the traffic. A lot of, I mean, not all night. You'd want to have a seat eventually. Maybe a folding chair of some sort. But not those plastic ones, you know, those strange, they were either teal or turquoise colored, and they were plastic, but they were woven in this odd plaid pattern, and they always scratched your legs when you stood up, and they always, the little triangular part where they connected to the tube of the chair was always hard, and you could get a welt from those things. You always pinched your finger, too, and you tried to fold them up as a kid. So to hell with those, no. No, maybe those clamshell-shaped classic motel chairs that you always see in the small-town porches and small-town motels. They rock, but not too much. They got a little rust, but not too much. You scrape your leg on the rusty part, you get lockjaw, but not too much. And they're hot as hell from baking in the sun all day, so hell with those. No, I'll stand. Well, I'll squat. But then again, how's that going to look? You know, people drive by and they see this guy squatting by the roadside outside the diner. They're either going to think I'm crazy or there's something wrong with the food. So I'll just stand then, okay, all summer long. But it is a summertime sort of joy just to stand out here and listen to the traffic, listen to the crickets. With the diner behind me, a box of light. You could see it for miles, promising hamburgers and grease and a good jukebox and Coca-Cola and human companionship. And at the other end, you have the road. You have this ribbon of loneliness, this concrete sea plied by men who have what to offer in the world, not but hemorrhoids and a mortgage, but yet they soldier on. You know, there's a story behind every car, and it's probably pretty dull, but nonetheless, you can imagine, you can dream, you can wonder. And it's not the sort of thing you can do in any other season, either. Well, you can. I mean, you can stand out here in the fall, but you're going to get a chill. You can stand out here in the winter, but let's say somebody tries to turn into the diner, and they hit the brakes, and they hit a patch of ice, and skid right into you, and bang, you're dead. And what's your cause of death? You know, standing outside, watching humanity pass by with its hemorrhoids and mortgages. And, you know, you don't want to see that as a cause of death in the newspaper, trust me. You can do it in the spring, I suppose, as an anticipation of the summer to come. But really, your prime season for standing outside of a diner by a highway, just thinking about the world, would be summertime. And that's not. But it gets boring really fast. So let's head on down to Lake Lilac. Well, I'm sitting on Voyageur's Rock right now, which legend has it that this is where the Voyageurs would tie their canoes. It's odd that they would do so because it's about 6 feet in diameter. They would require more rope, really, than you'd think they'd carry to have to tie just the canoe. And really, where's it going to go? I mean, it's not that big of a lake. They would have been much better off just simply dragging the canoe up on the shore, but what do you know? They're French. I can't. Who knows the strange, curious, and inscrutable ways of the Gauls? The kids, the high school kids, love to come down here and paint Voyageur Rock in the school colors every year. And as such, over the years, scientists have hypothesized that Voyageur Rock is actually now 1.5 inches thicker than it was 100 years ago, just from the accumulated layers of paint. I'm sitting on it right now, and there's probably lead from 1943 soaking right into my ass, and there's nothing I can do about it. I will have a dumb butt by the end of the evening. Oh, this is perfect. You know, we used to have a dolphin down here, I swear to God. Back in the days of the diner on KSTP, we got calls from a dolphin named Unim. So named, actually. We named him. I mean, who knows what dolphins call themselves. I mean, for all I know from what I've read about dolphins and their very strange sexual proclivities, dolphins could have names for each other like Rape Master 6000, and we'd never know because it's all clicks and bells and whistles, and they smile, and we think they're great. But, man, these guys, you know, I tell you, we're talking restraining orders in the animal kingdom, if only they knew. But we had a delightful dolphin who would call us up, and Euonym was the name we gave to him because of a wonderfully high-spirited spelling bee champion who had won by correctly spelling Euonym, and she had shouted out the name, the letters, with such joyful abandon, and the word just lodged in our brain forever. So when we had the opportunity to lend a name to a dolphin, Euonym was what we chose. I haven't heard from him in years. Euonym! Euonym! Long gone. And by long gone, of course, I mean dead, more than likely. Well, sic semper tempus fugit, whatever. Well, I have the little handheld uplink to the diner computer here. And I'm not going to specify anything. I'm just going to ask the diner computer. Diner computer, you know me, all right? You know who's listening. You know it's summer. You know we're sitting here by the lake. It's late at night. The moon is hanging low and ripe over the trees. It's as perfect as summer gets. It's as perfect as Minnesota gets. It's as perfect as life itself can ever be. Find a tune that'll match this. I was going to say magical moment, but the great thing about life is moments like this aren't magic. They're ordinary. It's ordinary that I'm here by the lake. It's ordinary that it's warm out tonight. It's ordinary that the moon is beautiful, and it's ordinary that the trees are full, and it's ordinary that there's no dolphin in the lake. All of these things are absolutely ordinary, so there's nothing magical about it. In other words, what can magic do that the real world can't? Well, there's eternal life, I suppose, but then you have to sell your soul to Satan or something, don't you? And it sort of spoils a nice summer evening if you realize in the back of your head, oh yeah, sold my soul to Satan. Damn. Oh well. Well, that's it for now, folks. I'd like to thank you for dropping by the diner. I'm James Lilacs, and I'm not sitting at the long boomerang pattern for my counter. I'm out here in the shores of Lake Lilac watching the moon and the water. I'll leave you with this. What better for a warm, late July night than this guy, Jackie Gleason. See you in a few weeks. Thank you. You and him. You're back.